connecting to the AOC Podcast Network. Enjoy your stay.
This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Did You Know, a podcast dedicated to the people, places, and culture of Lafayette, Louisiana, and the broader region we know as Acadiana. We'll learn about the warm joie de vivre, or joy of living, exemplified by our people, the beautiful sights, lush scenery, delicious food, and cultural traditions passed down generation after generation. Today's guest is Ben Berthelot, Executive Director of the Lafayette Convention and Visitors Commission. Ben has been serving in that role since June of 2012. Ben, welcome to our show.
Hi, Jan. Good to be here.
And thank you for your support of what I'm doing with this podcast. You were one of the first people, the first person I met with, and I want to put in a plug for that. My goal with this show is to really let people know how special and warm and inviting Lafayette, Louisiana is. And since that's your job,
right? Absolutely.
I thought you'd be a great early guest on the show.
And we hope you're very successful.
I do too.
If you're successful, that will benefit what we're trying to do
that's
to get
right.
people to come visit.
That's right. So we were talking before we started taping. You grew up here, and obviously you love Lafayette because you've stayed here in your professional life.
I do love it. Yeah, it's. I mean, I've always loved it. Never even, you know, really had an inkling to go anywhere else, whether that be for college. You know, I went to the University of Louisiana. Lafayette, it was USL at, at the time. I was the last graduating class for USL, but I just really can't, you know, I've had opportunities through headhunters and things for looking at other jobs, but, you know, I just can't imagine myself ever leaving here, and it's a great place now that I have a family to be, and it's kind of fun, you know, knowing a lot of people, and when you go to the grocery store, you know, stopping four or five times to visit with people, and it's a special place.
You've really invested a lot of your time up to this point in your young life, not only giving back civically. We can talk about that for a moment, but you got an early start in the political realm, working to help Joey Durrell get elected.
Right.
He served for 12 years, and that was kind of a launching pad for you in your current career.
I've been fortunate. You know, I started in the private sector at Coca-Cola, did that for 4 years and really loved it. And then, you know, Joey had approached me about going to work for him. And at the time, I was 27 years old and single. And I said, why not? You know, let's take a chance on this. And didn't know him very well at all. And I knew his son, who was a year younger than me. But, you know, just really enjoyed working with him and being a part of his team. And what really impressed me about Joey, and I try to do now in my role, is that he always pushed me and allowed me to grow and to do other things, whether that be Leadership Louisiana or, you know, just opportunities for me to better myself and worked up my way up through his administration as the director of community development. And then when this position became open, you know, I felt like I was a good fit in that I had a PR background and marketing background. What I majored in is what I did at Coke. And then I also had some government experience, which is important in this position as well. So it's been great. You know, it's often wonder what would happen had I not left Coca-Cola. You know, would I still be in this position? But you never know. But that's the way things work out sometimes.
Right, right. Well, you've been very engaged with United Way. You were one of the founding members of the 705, which is a professional group for young business people.
Right.
You've kind of touched all different segments of our community. I know now you're serving on the SLCC Foundation Board, which is our local community college throughout Acadiana.
Right.
And you're working with the ABC Fund with the Community Foundation to support the arts. So you really don't just talk, you're action.
Yeah, you know, I feel like I've been doing it for a long time.
Get burned out. We need
exactly. you. But there's so many great causes, and I've been fortunate to be involved with a lot of them. And, you know, when I was younger, I think a lot of boards were looking for young people to diversify their boards. And
you were the minority.
I was a minority. And now, you know, I consider myself to be a little older, but I've been fortunate. And there's so many great causes in our community that really, if anybody wants to get involved and make a difference, there's plenty of opportunities out there.
Right. Let's talk about Lafayette. What do you think, when you think of home in Lafayette, when you're describing it, I guess you travel and meet other convention and visitors types around the country. Mm-hmm. How would you describe Lafayette when you talk about home?
Well, it sort of depends on what audience I'm talking to, but at the end of the day, you know, we're known as the heart of Cajun country and now the heart of Cajun and Creole country. We've been branded that way for 30 years, and so, you know, what I describe is that the whole Cajun, the Cajunization of Cajun is kind of going all over the world, and even inside of Louisiana, you know, many people claim Cajun, but really, for the authentic, true experience, this is where you need to be,
right,
in the heart of Acadiana. And so, you know, and then, of course, the food, the music, the birthplace of Cajun and Zydeco music, now the happiest city in America. And that's an interesting title because everything that we talk about and about our area, you know, we are a happy people, mm-hmm. the joy of life, the joie de vivre. And so it really boils down to those things. And at the end of the day, sometimes, depending on how much time you have, it's such a special place. It can be tough to summarize it in a 2-minute elevator speech.
Right.
So what I always say is if we can get them here, we have mm-hmm. them hooked. And we just have to try to get them here. And
right.
That's what we're trying to do as the marketing organization for Lafayette Parish. But, you know, everything that we promote pretty much revolves around the food, the music, mm-hmm. and the culture, and ultimately entwined in all of those things are our people.
Right. It's funny when I hear people talk about when they travel and they'll find a place that says they have Cajun food and
right.
it's usually just a lot of pepper.
Right. Exactly.
It's not the subtle seasoning, you
right.
know, that our local chefs, the regional chefs know. But until you leave our area and experience other places, you don't always realize how special and unique Lafayette is.
Absolutely.
And I love hearing people talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, when I was doing research for this, Ben, I was looking online and talking about our culture and what we have here. I didn't know what a conscious traveler was. And I found this site, and it's on your site, too. Mm-hmm. There's a blog where people talk about conscious traveling and eco-friendly mm-hmm. traveling, where people want to leave little to no footprint. They want
right.
to be able to travel in maybe canoe, bike ride,
right.
hike. And they look at our region in Lafayette as the hub
right.
for a lot of that. Would you talk about that, what
sure.
we have here?
You know, I guess ecotourism has kind of been a buzzword in the tourism industry for several years, but we really do have a lot to offer. In fact, we just put out a blog piece, 5 Epic Outdoor Experiences in Lafayette Parish. And when I say Lafayette, I mean we're really talking about mm-hmm. the whole region because that's what, you know, we sell and we promote. But over the last few years, it seems like it's been growing. As you said, it's more people are looking for that. And what we've seen is a couple different things. Well, first of all, you got paddling on places like the Bayou Teche. The Atchafalaya Basin is such a treasure. I mean, there's nothing like
it's beautiful.
In the world. I think 860,000 acres. It's the largest type of swamp in the country. And so what people are very interested in nowadays is getting outdoors and getting active. And so kayaking, mm-hmm. Canoeing, and a lot of that is happening both in Lake Martin and in the Atchafalaya Basin and the Bayou Vermilion, you know, which
right.
is a great treasure that we have. And we recently hosted a blogger, and he was from Toronto. And what we set up through Jesse Guidry in our communications department, who actually worked at Vermilionville and very passionate about the Bayou Vermilion, they started in Lake Martin. And they did a 5-day paddle, and ended up in the Vermilion Bay mm-hmm. at the you know the base of the Gulf of Mexico, and each night they stopped and camped along the Bayou Vermilion, and it was a really neat. I joined them for not the whole time, but for mm-hmm. a couple of times, but just some beautiful stories and photography that came out about that. But it's something that we're trying to really continue to push. And so at Lake Martin, you got a guy named Corey Work who does some great kayaking tours. He actually speaks German. And so our international visitation has increased. And in the state of Louisiana over the last 2 years, 2 years ago, they were number one in international growth. This past year, we were number two in international growth. And so we're seeing a lot of growth on the international mm-hmm. side. And so Corey actually offers his tour in German. Of course, we have others that offered in French, but there's so many opportunities to get out and experience the outdoors. You know, in addition to paddling, we've long been known as a great bird watching
destination. I was about to ask about that, and especially Lake Martin.
Lake Martin is such a treasure as well. And, you know, bird watching, depending on what time of year, there's better times, obviously, but you can get some, and particularly photographers. And, actually, one of our local photographers is now offering a tour for photographers, and he's getting people from all over the world coming in to experience that. So some great bird watching, not just at Lake Martin, but also on Avery Island, where Tabasco is located. We have hiking, even, you know, the Cadet Nature Station. A lot of people don't realize that, but it's a beautiful,
it is beautiful,
beautiful little path,
and that's right in the heart of Lafayette, right on Alexander.
It's a beautiful trail, and then of course, swamp tours. You know, I mean, it's something that people have been doing for years, and we have a lot of different options on the swamp tour side, both at Lake Martin and in the Chaffalai Basin. And the last thing I want to touch on is a development recently where the Boy Scouts, through their swamp-based program, have purchased the old McGee's Landing. And I think that's going to be a great opportunity for us. Every year, every summer, they're bringing in hundreds of Boy Scouts from all over the country, and actually some from outside of the country, to experience the Atchafalaya Basin. And to have them now headquartered there, I think, is going to open up some great opportunities, and I'm really excited about that.
Is that a private, public-private partnership, or just the Boy Scouts?
As I understand it, the Boy Scouts purchased the building, and now they have grandiose plans to build a beautiful facility out there as they can raise the money. Uh-huh. But until then, they're still offering kayaking, canoeing, swamp tours, and all those things. And I think, you know, they have a passion for preserving the basin and really exposing it to more people. Mm-hmm. And so when that happens, you know, we hope that families and friends travel with the Boy Scouts during the summer to come experience our area. You know, they can't go out on the paddle necessarily with them, but they should come to our area and spend time in our area, as their kids are doing that. But
Right. Even
the general public will have access to, you know, I don't think there will be a few who would do a week-long paddle. That's a pretty intense. You have to be pretty serious about that, but perhaps there's portions of the paddle that they're doing for the Boy Scouts in the summer that we can offer to the public. So
Right. We
actually have had some great conversations with them to really capitalize on that. And like I said, the Atchafalaya Basin is such a treasure.
It is. I know John Williams and his wife with Pack and Paddle really have a lot of a love for getting people to know our community, and they offer a lot of tours. And that's right by my house. I live by our university. Mm-hmm. And I think about just within 10 minutes, you know, Lake Martin's right there. And I want to put in something, too, about Lake Martin. Our local mural artist, who's known internationally, Robert Dafford, has a beautiful mural that he painted. Mm-hmm. And it's at Lake Martin in the Rookery. Mm-hmm. And it just depicts the beautiful birds and the scenery. And there's so much that a lot of our local residents don't even realize right under our nose.
Absolutely.
Here.
Yeah, and I'm guilty of that myself. And until I took this position 5 years ago, there was a lot of things that I wasn't aware of, or I didn't.
You were too busy volunteering.
That's right. I didn't experience, but you know, I mean, so many places. And you know, the last thing I want to touch on and we didn't talk about in outdoors, but is biking. And you know, we have, I think, some room to grow in that area. But you have a lot of momentum through the last several years with organizations like Trail,
right,
and the Attakapau Ishtak Trail. That they're working on, the bike lanes now that have been added on West Bayou Parkway and on Congress, all those things are things that visitors want.
They do.
They want, and they can experience in other areas. And so I think it's important that we continue to grow those type of assets, the connectivity. You know, people want to be able to not have to always get into a car to experience things.
And, right.
And there's other parts of the country, I think, that are doing a little better than us, but it's exciting to see the momentum that we have in that direction.
We mentioned food earlier, and I don't think we could really go any farther unless we talked about the high number of locally owned restaurants we have that highlight our local cuisine. And I think Eat Lafayette is a great place to start with that.
It is.
Focus on our restaurant tours.
Yes, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And Eat Lafayette started 13 years ago. It was a 2-week campaign, had 18 restaurants signed up. And, you know, the gist behind the campaign was that during the summertime, at that time, our restaurants were slow. People were traveling. Mm-hmm. There weren't as many people eating in the restaurants. And so it was Charlie Goodson and Gerald Brill, my predecessor, and Julie Calzone and others got together to launch Eat Lafayette. And in 13 years, it's been fun to watch it really grow. Mm-hmm. So now we have over 100 locally owned restaurants signed up, and it's become a 3-month campaign.
It really has grown.
Yeah.
Wow.
And interestingly, you know, I don't know, I'm not sure what they call it in New Orleans, but whatever they call their Eat Lafayette campaign, we actually have more restaurants sign up than New Orleans mm-hmm. does. And so that's a pretty impressive thing. And what I always say as you know, our locally owned restaurants, there would be no Tastiest Town of the South award that we won from Southern Living. There would be no Best Food City in the United States award that we won from Rand McNally in USA Today. There would be no livability.com top 10 foodie city in the United States if it weren't for our locally owned restaurants. Mm-hmm. They are the product. You know, that's why people come here to eat. They're, not to offend any national chain, but there's a Chili's in pretty much every city in America. Yeah. And so, you know, there's only one Charlie G's in America. Mm-hmm. There's only one Cafe Vermilionville in America. And there's only one Judy's Inn. There's only one Bailey's. There's, you know, only one Hub City Diner. And I could go on and on and mm-hmm. on. But that's what makes us unique. And we're actually working right now on our campaign, which is going to start June 20th. And we're working on some new commercial spots to really talk about the sort of the story behind. Because really, what makes our restaurants so unique are the families involved and the right. people involved. And there's so many great stories. And so, you know, our tagline is going to be, come be a part of our story. And we're going to sort of highlight some of those stories through our messaging and our campaign this year. And I'm really excited about that. Our commercials should start running sometime after June 20th. And then this year, partly because of our food reputation, the Lieutenant Governor actually moved the Louisiana Seafood Cook-Off from New Orleans to Lafayette.
I read that.
And so on June 20th, we're going to have the Taste of Lafayette kickoff to kick off Eat Lafayette mm-hmm. tied in with the Louisiana Seafood Cook-Off, where they will have 12 different chefs from across Louisiana competing for the title of, you know, the Louisiana Seafood Cook-Off champion.
That's going to be a tough vote.
Yes.
You know there's going to be some good contestants.
Very tough. And for the first time ever, we will have, you know, it's always been a hot ticket in town. Mm-hmm. It was a private event for sponsors, and we did giveaways on the radio. And we're still going to do that this year. But for the first time ever, you'll have the opportunity to purchase tickets for $20. You can be exposed to around 60 different locally owned restaurants. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty cheap date if you want to take your wife or
experience.
Your kids or anything. Yeah.
Yeah, so Charlie Goodson has really been a leader in our local restaurant market. I know he was the one that, like as you said, was one of the founding members of Eat Lafayette.
Yeah.
And this year, Ken Veron
right.
from Cafe Vermilionville
yeah.
is
yeah,
chairing
Char-
it.
Yeah, yeah, Charlie's pretty incredible. Got to know him a little bit. He was actually on our board and, mm-hmm. and with my board chairman. And he does so much in our community.
I mean,
he's always there to lend a helping hand. And if you go to, you know, those of us who go to a lot of events, I remember even back to in my 20s, Charlie was always there himself mm-hmm. serving the gumbo, you mm-hmm. know, whether that be at a golf tournament or a fundraiser or whatever. And he does that for so many different groups. And you know, he really has done a lot to grow our Eat Lafayette campaign. And this year he came to us and said, look, it's time for somebody else to kind of take over the reins because, you know, that's just kind of how he is. He's so humble, but he didn't want to always be necessarily the face of Eat Lafayette. He wanted mm-hmm. others to be able to experience that. And so our advisory board sort of suggested that we look at maybe a younger restaurateur, and Ken Veron is another great guy who has mm-hmm. a great story
and, you know, a family
taking over his family's business and you know, hoping to carry that on for many years. And so Ken's doing a great job. He's got a lot of energy and excitement, and we're excited to work with him.
That's great. Well, good luck on
Thanks.
This year's campaign.
Thank
I know
you.
It's going to go well.
We're excited.
We also locally have a lot of festivals mm-hmm. that I think, again, many of us take for granted.
Yep.
There's so many free festivals, whether it's Downtown Alive that the downtown, you know, Lafayette puts on, or we're going to talk about Mardi Gras a little bit, but Festival International.
Right.
Would you talk some about who comes in for these festivals and what we offer?
Sure. Well, you know, from my perspective, and everybody has their own opinion, but we can never have too many festivals. I mean, it's such a great opportunity to get people here for the first time, particularly with the history of a festival like Festival Cadien and Creole, which has been around for 41 years, Festival International, which has been around for 31 years now. Those are great opportunities to get people here for the first time. And it's different, sort of different audiences, mm-hmm. I think, for both festivals. But, you know, we just had Festival International, roughly, you know, they estimate 300,000 people in our town. And it's a different festival in that I think maybe a lot of people come searching for that Cajun and Zydeco music, but Festival International is so much more than that.
It's literally international.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
And so it sort of exposes the world to Lafayette. And mm-hmm. I think if you look at where we've come as a city, over the years, and we really do have an international flair to our area, and I think festival has been a big part of helping to mm-hmm. grow that, along with Philippe Gustin at the International Center and Consolidated Government and the university, particularly, along with many others. But it's wonderful to see that international flair mm-hmm. in our community for a week, and I think we're really starting to see a lot more of that throughout the year. So, the big ones, Festival International, Festival Acadien, 41 years
started in
the fall in October, started as really a way to preserve our culture. I think started at Blackman Coliseum and now has grown to Girard Park, and mm-hmm. it's an incredible festival. And both festivals, there are people from all over the world that come in for both. And I know 2 years ago for Festival Acadien and Creole, all 50 states were represented. They did a survey, and there was somebody from at least mm-hmm. all 50 states. And so, from a tourism standpoint, not only is it a great showcase of our culture, but it's a great opportunity for us to get people here for the first time
right.
for those festivals.
And they're two good times of year, April
yeah.
and October.
April and October, the weather's always great. And,
yeah.
and those are our busiest times of the year, the spring and the fall, because of mm-hmm. the weather. Although our summertime business has really grown over the last few years, but they're mm-hmm. great. And then, you have so many new festivals that have come up. And I meet with it feels like I meet with a person every month who wants to start a new festival, and we try to do what we can to help them with a little bit of seed funding, because I believe that you never know 31 years ago who thought the Festival International would
I
be
certainly
where
didn't.
It is now, and you could say the same thing for Festival
right.
International. South by Southwest was started with a $5,000 grant from the CVB in Austin, and look at where South by Southwest uh-huh. is. So I try to be open to everybody, and we can't do a whole lot, but we try to provide them some seed money with the understanding that, if you're successful, then you should be able to sustain yourself hopefully at some point. But, just off the top of my head, we had the Black Pot Festival, which is a very unique festival at Vermilionville every year in October. We had the Acadiana Pool Boy Festival, which mm-hmm. was just launched, and that has been very successful. They have the world record now for the longest pool boy, and for the Guinness Book of World Records. you have the Boudin Cook-Off every
which
October.
Which is a big hit.
Big hit. They're about to celebrate their 10th anniversary. Mm-hmm. You have now the Scott Boudin Festival, mm-hmm. which is a great showcase of our area, and Scott, the Boudin capital of the world. You have the Crawfish Festival, which is in Brobridge, but people come in from all over the world for that, and they end up staying in Lafayette Parish mm-hmm. and really all of Acadiana, because the demand and the number of hotel rooms in St. Martin Parish is not enough to meet the demand. So
right.
we benefit from all of those things, and I'm sure I'm leaving a lot of festivals out. I know I am, but there's just so many. And like I said, I have people coming to me almost monthly to start another one. It's part of our culture. It's a way that we,
mm-hmm. we celebrate.
We celebrate. And,
yeah.
So there's a festival for just about every bird, frog, mm-hmm.
The frog
you name
festival
it. I forget how they say that, but if you can – if it flies, well, I don't know, whatever, but we have a festival for it, and pretty much we do.
I know. And at these festivals, I want to emphasize that they just feel safe and fun. Like you'll see children in strollers
right.
and families out during the day. Of course, at night,
right.
There's a little bit more of a nightlife,
right.
but there's something for everybody where
Absolutely.
You can just relax and pick and choose and still always have a lot to do here. It's wonderful for families.
There's no question. I'm glad you mentioned that, because we do pride ourselves in being a very family-friendly mm-hmm. destination. And not only from a safety standpoint, certainly, that we can offer, but also from an affordability standpoint. We were just recently named by Trivago one of the top 20 most affordable destinations for 2017. And that's important when you're traveling with a family of three or four.
Very important.
To know that you can come here for a weekend on a budget, and you can experience so many great things, because mm-hmm. so much of what we had to offer is free. And if it's not free, then it's inexpensive.
Right. Even our museums are so inexpensive.
They are.
The Children's Museum, the Hilliard Art Museum on
right.
campus.
Yes,
very inexpensive for people to experience.
It's a big deal, and that's why I think, we've become to be known as a family-friendly destination, mm-hmm. certainly from a safety standpoint, but also from an affordability standpoint, where you can bring your family and have a great weekend and go out and explore everything that we have to offer.
Our biggest festival, and we don't call it a festival, but Mardi Gras
mm-hmm.
is probably what most people think of when they
right.
think of South Louisiana, and in particular our area. I think we're right behind New Orleans in the number of people attending.
Right.
And you can't really compare us to New Orleans, do you think?
No.
It's just two different feelings when you
– Absolutely.
New Orleans Mardi Gras is great, but ours, I think, is a little bit more toned down and like we said, family friendly.
Yeah. You know, we sell ourselves as the second largest Mardi Gras in the state, which we are, and then also as a very family friendly Mardi Gras. And what I tell people all the time is, look, you got to go. You got to go experience.
You have to see both.
Yeah. New Orleans Mardi Gras. Don't mm-hmm. – you know, there's no question about that. It's a fabulous thing. But also, you know, you need to come – Mm-hmm. experience Lafayette because it's a totally different experience, and as particularly as you grow older and you have a family and you want to experience Mardi Gras where you can, you know, lay out a blanket and have your kids, you know, and people are so friendly, and they'll give beads to the kids. But we hear so many positive stories from families who decide to experience Mardi Gras in Lafayette Parish, and it's wonderful to be able to have that. You know, it's something that, from a branding standpoint and a marketing standpoint, you know, the majority of our funding is spent trying to drive traffic year round. But fortunately, we have some big events that we're able to market as well, like the festivals. But Mardi Gras is one of our top three. There's no question about it. And you know, from an economic impact standpoint, it's huge. And there's a lot of numbers that I won't get into. But you know, over $110 million. Of expenditures by folks experiencing Mardi Gras in our area. Mm-hmm. And that's big. And it's only continuing to grow now in places like Youngsville and Scott and Karen Crow. You have parades, and those continue to grow. So you can really make you know, 2 weekends out of Mardi Gras in an area where you can do it affordably and safely. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't happen by accident. You know, I mean, it's, of course, the crews and the associations that help put it on, but the police and the public works crews that keep, you know, I'm always amazed as I drive on Saturday morning to go get breakfast after a Mardi Gras parade, and you would swear nothing happened.
The streets are clean.
They're clean, that's right.
It's amazing when you see the night before and then compare.
It's unbelievable.
On a previous show, we had Rick Shapley mm-hmm. and John Swift talking about, from a volunteer standpoint, what is involved in putting on Mardi Gras. And I think most people that live here just experience Mardi Gras as a fun celebration, and you know, it's a group effort between government, you know, the police, right. your association, the Convention and Visitors Commission. So many people work all year
right.
to make those couple of weeks fun and safe for everyone, especially safe. I want to emphasize yeah, that.
Exactly.
The safety is number one.
Absolutely.
So,
and we're blessed. I mean, you mm-hmm. know, it's a very family friendly event, like most of what we, like all of what we have to offer, and that's kind of, like I said, something that we're known for. And as you said, it doesn't happen by accident.
Right.
We owe so many people, the volunteers who aren't getting mm-hmm. paid anything to put these things on. So it's wonderful.
I want to ask you before we close, from a historical perspective, I think a lot of people have heard of maybe Cajun or
right.
Acadiana. And only when you read and learn more about it do you realize the strength of the people that live here
right.
and the reason that people not only stay here, as you did, mm-hmm. but once people move here, they really fall in love with our culture.
Right.
Do you have any thoughts to share about, you know, people that want to learn more about the history of the resettlement of the Acadians? I mean, they're really the backbone.
Yeah.
Of, I think, what built our community to be so strong and the survivors that
yes,
they are.
There's no question. And it's very fascinating. It's interesting. And it's something that, to be honest with you, I talk to our counterparts in the eastern part of Canada all the time, and they are so passionate about the history of the Acadian mm-hmm. people. And they yearn to get here to see their cousins and, you know, their relatives. And what I tell them, as I said, you know, unfortunately, growing up, at least where I went to school, we didn't talk a whole lot about the history and of the Acadian mm-hmm. people and the culture of that. But I've come to learn it and appreciate it through being involved in this job and in government, where, you know, we constantly were hosting people from you know, eastern part of Canada and others. But the thing about that's so interesting about our area is that, and I've heard it described something like this, is that whether it be the Acadians or the Creoles, is that these people were basically forced here, you know, mm-hmm. and settled here, not at their own accord. You know,
no, it was political.
It was not their decision.
Yeah.
And because of that, I think that was sort of a rallying cry for them, mm-hmm. and they learned how to work together and to get things done on their own and to make a settlement. You know, and then all out of that came all of these cultures and the music and the food that mm-hmm. we all now enjoy and promote. But they were forced to assimilate, And I think that's what makes it special. And I think it's what we see during times of tragedy and disaster. Our people really rally around each other. Mm-hmm. And it's, strangers helping strangers, friends helping friends, and family helping family, and everything else. But we really rally during those times. And you've seen it so many times, even over the last several years, whether that be the flood or Katrina or mm-hmm. Hurricane Rita or what. But it's something special about it. And I'm not saying that doesn't happen in other parts of the country, but I don't think it happens to the extent that it happens here. And I think a lot of that has to do with our history and with the fact that all of these different cultures were arrived here not at their own will, but were forced to mm-hmm. work together and live together.
To survive.
And survive.
But that's been maintained in our culture
absolutely.
And our roots.
Absolutely.
And I know as an anecdote for that, we have 8 Days of Hope
right.
coming in June 2017. And 8 Days of Hope is going to bring in, a couple of thousand volunteers from around the country to work for 1 week to help people that still haven't gotten their homes back together after the huge August 2016 flood. Mm-hmm. But the reason they're coming here is they said other areas had more need, but Lafayette was ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
They had a volunteer base already. They had the facts, the homes together,
right.
and they were ready to show up where they knew they could make a difference.
Right.
And it was our culture
right.
that drew them here.
Absolutely.
And so that surprised me because I thought, boy, Baton Rouge really was more underwater
right.
than Lafayette was, although we had a horrendous flood here.
Sure.
Other areas need help more, but they weren't organized like
yeah.
our people were.
Yeah.
And
part of that, I think, is our people. Part of it is we've had some experiences, and we have great organizations who are now experts at mm-hmm. disaster recovery, whether that be United Way of Acadiana or Lafayette Catholic Services Center, American Red Cross, and others, but they really come together in a collaborative effort.
Right.
And I think that collaboration is something that you see throughout our community, but it's important, and I think I agree with you. It's one of the reasons that these people are going to be here for a week, and we're going to try to show them some of our great cuisine. And
while they're here.
And we'll have Grammy winner Chubby Carrier playing for them one night at the Cajun Dome. So they're mostly here to work, but mm-hmm. I'm not going to let them leave without experiencing
some
of our area.
Right. For anybody listening also, if you want to know more about history, you can just Google, the Acadian resettlement, acadiana.com, and probably pull up different historical aspects. But back in the 80s, when Beau Soleil was put together, the band, mm-hmm. Michael, Doucet's band, and Robert Dafford started painting murals about the Acadian resettlement. It was really in the 80s when a lot of this people really understood how much pride they should have in their history
right.
and their heritage. And so there's a lot online, and I encourage people before you come to find out more about us, because we are rich in culture. And the people, once you meet people from Lafayette, Louisiana,
right.
and Acadiana, you just won't forget us.
Yeah, I'll tell you a quick story as we close. But last week I was in Kentucky, and we're going to be hosting a group of 50 journalists from the Midwest Travel Journalists Association. And I was presenting to them, welcoming them to Lafayette. And, I talked about everything, happiest city in America, all the food accolades, and, everything that you and I have been talking about here. At the end of the presentation, the guy in charge got up and said to his group, he said, we wanted to go to another country, and we didn't quite have the budget. So what we decided to do is go to another country within the United States, mm-hmm. and that's in the Lafayette area. And I thought that was a pretty neat way of describing our area, because in some ways we are exotic and mm-hmm. and almost like another country in yeah. that you can't experience what you can experience here anywhere else in the world. And I would say even as that's what I tell people, you can find pockets of it.
Mm-hmm.
You can find pockets of our culture in New Orleans and Shreveport and Lake Charles and Houma and others, but you don't have to go searching for it here. It's here. It's
right.
ever present every day, and we're fortunate.
We are fortunate. We're the hub city of Acadiana, mm-hmm. and I couldn't be happier with this interview today, Ben. I want to thank you, Ben Berthelot, who serves as executive director of the Lafayette Convention and Visitors Commission. And I'd like to thank you for listening. I'm Jan Swift with Did You Know, a podcast dedicated to telling the story of Lafayette, Louisiana. Ben, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jan.
Have a great summer. And I want to thank William McFarlane, our producer at AOC Community Media, for producing this show. And for more information, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook. And we'll be following up. I'm Jan Swift with Did You Know? Thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on this or any program on the AOC Podcast Network do not reflect the views and opinions of Lafayette Consolidated Government, Cox Communications, LUS Fiber, AOC Community Media, its board of directors, or its staff. To learn more about becoming a community media producer, visit us on the web at aocinc.org.